Welcome to the sixth week of Walled Garden Weekly. I'm Arash Kashmiri, and I'm joined here by Kevin Pazurande.
Hello, hello.
And we're here to talk about apps and drink some beer. So this week's beer, it comes from Utah. It's from the Uinta Brewing Company. It's kind of a hot day out here. We're in Saratoga, California. And this beer is called Monkshine. It is a Belgian-style blonde ale, 6.8% alcohol by volume. It's just really drinkable beer. It's nice, a little bit of a sweet start to it, kind of hoppy finish. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Kevin? It's pretty pretty light, kind of an amber color.
I like it. It's for you know, light Belgians, usually not a big fan. They're too smooth.
I called Kevin when I was at Whole Foods. I'm like, look, here are your beer options. I was thinking, well, can we do like a hard cider this week? You want to do like a Belgian white? Originally, I was thinking we'd do Shock Top, which is another sort of Belgian wheat. And
But I hipstered Arash.
He did. Like, he was like, find something really indie.
And it was made by, because it's made, you know, Shock Top is brewed by Anheuser-Busch.
Believe it or not, yes.
And I was like, I like Shock Top. I was just
it's like Blue Moon. They're the sort of mass-produced wheat beers.
I was like, Arash, we're never going to impress the internet.
They're going to be like, who are you?
Without drinking, like,
we need to be
hipster beer.
Really hipster in some guy's bathtub.
This isn't hipster beer, though. This is like, I mean, I PBR.
It is USDA beer. Organic, so maybe that. Blessed
Utah.
By Utah.
It's Mormon beer.
It is Mormon beer.
In honor of Paul Ryan, we're going to drink.
I suppose so. Not that I want to honor Paul Ryan, but. Good. Anyway, so it is good. I recommend you try it out. And then probably next week we'll be back to our classic caramel Belgians.
Mm.
So the game we're talking about this week is Rage of Bahamut. And, you know, if you've been anywhere on the App Store in the past, like, 7 years, no, seriously, like, Rage of Bahamut has been top grossing for a really long time. I mean, they go down to, like, number four, number five, and they're back up to number one.
They're just there.
And, I looked at the screenshots when it came out, and I was like, huh, I don't really get this. Like, card game, trading card game, kind of like a, you know, popular in Asian markets. I don't understand. This is probably going to go away. It's probably some botnet thing. And then, a couple weeks later, I was like, hey, wait, Rage of Bahamut's still there. And then there was another app, I can't remember the name of it, who cloned their icon. It's a similar sort of like pointy tooth dragon, number six or seven grossing. I'm like, okay, so these Asian card game things are really taking off. So anyway, today I was thinking, you know, what are we going to play? And I figured let's give Rage of Bahamut a whirl. Let's see what all the fuss is about. Let's try and figure out how this app is making so much money. Who's playing it? What's going on? What are people saying in the reviews? So I did. I downloaded it. And then I started it up.
And then 20 minutes later,
I was done with the tutorial. So Rage of Bahamut, just to give you guys a quick summary in case you haven't played it, is a trading card game. If you were a kid who had a shoebox full of Magic cards, it'll be kind of familiar to you. And as far as I can tell, the way the game works is, so the tutorial starts you off and tells you that, hey, there are these cards and you can get some free cards and you go to, oh, by the way, at the very beginning, it demands that you log in with something. So,
oh my God.
Facebook or MobaGear.
And it's like, and it's out of date. It like sends you to some like legacy Facebook.
Yeah, it's not using
web-based sign in. It doesn't do the single sign on, you know.
Truly awful.
And it takes a long time.
Yeah.
And you're not sure
it's
that
real
it's
slow. There's a lot of spinner in this game. There's just you get to see the spinner all the time.
Maximum spinner.
The spinner is 9 out of 10 spinners. But yeah, so I mean, you start through this tutorial, you get some cards at the end. It tells you kind of how the battle system works. I guess you have cards that you can they get like EXP, and then you can level them or evolve
you
them
can,
by putting
you can
two
like
cards
merge
together.
Them. I really tried to understand this game.
Yeah, I just you know
there's
I,
and there's so many different points. There's like rage points.
There's rage
and
points.
There's like CP, there's like card points,
yeah,
and friend points.
Right.
And I don't know where they are or where how many I have or
the
how
game
to
is,
get them.
And there's like, it's an astonishingly complicated game model obfuscated by a ridiculously bad UI.
But
so,
and then also, but wrapping a seemingly unbelievably simple core mechanic,
which is just tap on monsters.
And it's just like attack power. There's like special abilities.
I'm not even sure you need to tap beyond the first one. It seems to like play itself.
It's like auto. I mean,
it's a really weird deal. And then it's like you get like a boss battle at the end of the tutorial and you get some kind of card. And then at the end of it, it's like, oh, and there's also this whole referral code business, which we've seen since the early days of Storm 8 games where it's like, join my crew.
We
definitely have 5 crew points to go to the next level. And I mean, as you'd expect, like, I looked at the reviews, and, like, tons of the reviews that people are leaving are like, here's my friend code. It's 689YZQ3. Join my crew. And I guess they get something, you get something. It's just
and
standard.
I couldn't even find this ability to join an order. I think it's called an order.
I guess that's like a clan.
I'm garnishing. I was so confused. I went to the wiki.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this game?
So
how do I spend money in this game?
I kind of like understand why they call it Rage of Bahamut, because as I was playing, like, I was raging, because this game is like, I mean, I don't want to take like this podcast and turn it into a thing where I bash people and I'm like, this shit sucks. But I really like, I don't get this game. It's I don't know what the redeeming quality here is. It's like, first of all, the whole game is built on a web view, and it is really just a web view. Like, if you scroll up, like, you can go scroll past the game view, and it's just like
you're looking at a web view in a scroll view.
Yeah.
I don't even
know what they've done here. And it's loading stuff off their server, and their server is slow as fuck. And right. So you're just like looking at the spinner all the time. The game's graphics are just astonishingly bad. So now, credit to the guy whoever painted like the character art on the cards themselves. That stuff is pretty good. It's
right,
nice.
But it's like surrounded fantasy by art. 90s HTML.
But it is surrounded by like the most noisy, awful, just UI design. Like, I can't even call this UI design. Like, the font is garbage. The way the stuff is laid out on like the home, like, they have like a player homepage where you just, it's just this giant long list. Like, you know, it almost reminds me of like, you know, when crazy people make web pages to tell you that like you should wear a tinfoil hat, and it changes like 7 different font colors throughout the page, and it goes to different, like, size 20, size 5. Yep. There's like weird illustrations in the sides, and it's like, you know the person has schizophrenia. It's like they hired one of those guys to design the UI for this game.
I mean Aura was like the first website I ever made.
Yeah. It is. It's like weird, cheesy,
black background. You know,
it's awful. It's really bad.
It's
so
confusing.
So I want to hear from people who are listening to this podcast that love Rage of Bahamut. contact@walledgardenweekly.com. Explain to me why you like this game. And I endeavor to understand, because I mean, there's no question about it. This game has a lot of people that are spending a lot of money.
It's just, I just didn't know how to play. I mean, if it isn't obvious, we didn't play this game a lot, but because I didn't know what to do.
I couldn't get into it.
Like, I got some bad, I played a battle and I won. I don't know why.
It's not even that I like hate this game. I mean, I do hate this game, but I hate it not because like I played it and I understood it and I was like, oh, this is empty.
Right.
There's not much going on.
Right.
It's not like there's like a circle and you got to draw your finger around it and it's a simple game. No,
right.
It's like, I just don't even know what to do next. Like, I don't understand.
Like, what is my objective? Like,
how is this a game?
What points, like, can I convert points? What do I, and I, it took me a while I was like, I need to at least find the IAP in this game, because clearly people can find it. And it took me a while. And then when I did, I like tapped on this thing and then it said, oh, you have 0 rage points. And I clicked on it and then nothing happened. And so I was like, oh, okay, I guess. And then like 30 seconds later, the IAP screen pops up. And I was like, what? Like, you know, probably some, this game. So anyway, clearly it's not even valuable what we're saying at all. But we said we were going to, you know, we decided we were going to review this game or try and do a developer analysis of it. And we literally were able to garner nothing, which raises some serious questions.
I don't know what to say. Like, on so many levels, like, I just don't understand this game. I mean, it's serving me web pages. The web pages are awful, and I click to go to more web pages that are loaded to me from a slow web server. Like,
and
why am I even playing this
and
app?
And collector games. There's like,
why
collector
is this
games
not,
like Pocket Frogs is a collector game.
Right.
And that's fun. And
but
like,
it's
you
a
understand
game,
what
and
you're
you know
doing.
How to play it, and it has a UI that makes sense, and you go to the pond and you jump around and
right. I mean, there's something.
There's a game there. This is even like, I mean.
So then the question, like, number 5 grossing.
Yeah, not even. It goes to number 1 sometimes. Like, this game is dominating other actual games with actual good art and actual good gameplay and actual good everything. Good music. This game doesn't even have any sound as far as I can tell.
How could it? It's a web view.
It's astonishing to me. Like, I really, this is a plea to my listeners to help me understand why this game,
like,
is
there's
successful.
A secret button that's like, new UI.
I mean, I feel like I have a good handle on a lot of the stuff that happens in our industry, but these games are they are very hard for me to understand.
I don't even know.
I really
even
need to find
a
player and talk. I mean, in some way, this is not very different from a lot of the, you know, other web view based games, right? Like Storm8 made a whole company based on these types of games, as did many other people who followed in their footsteps. But it's just I don't know. This is kind of like, maybe this game is.
I mean, I don't understand card games very well. They're not, you know, I will admit that, but like, I know Magic has, there's like complexity to it, and there's strategy, and there's like the cards have attributes and they
right
combine,
and
there's, and
well
there's,
there is, and there's that aspect where you build your deck and stuff like that, and I maybe that's just hidden to me and I haven't gotten that deep in this game yet, but the whole idea of like assembling your deck and these cards complement each other, like, I'm not getting much of that. Like, I just see, like, I put 2 cards together and I get like knight plus,
and they have like one attribute, they have like attack and like a special ability.
Yeah.
And there's also no way for me to learn, which right. is so the thing is that, you know, everyone's got to be experiencing this, because yeah, everyone's got to be experiencing this. And so I keep looking at this game and, you know, here's the data points, right? Number top five grossing,
yep.
like perma grossing,
right.
6,000 reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
That's not very many.
They're not asking for reviews, and that, like, so let's divide by 10.
Right.
60,000 reviews. You know, those are the kind of numbers I'd expect to see for a game that's been number one grossing for this long.
Right. Where is it in the paid or free charts? I mean,
like, I have no idea.
Yeah, that would be good to know, and we should have done this research.
The other interesting thing is that you can't see this on the phone, but on iTunes, if you look at the reviews, the most useful reviews, they have like 35 yes votes, yeah. like yes, this is helpful, and sorry, half whatever out of 35 votes, half are yes, this is useful, and half are no, this isn't useful, which is really weird.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them are like that.
Right.
That is bizarre.
It is.
And it's, you know, there's everyone's heard story about bots and, you know, review bots and free download bots and everything. But what about like how the top grossing thing is just, I mean, what is possible is that there are 1,000 people who, let's go with 10,000 people.
They're just whales.
And just once a week they drop $50 on this game.
So here's the thing. I just looked it up. So it's the top. It's 125 top free. You know, I'm curious to see. So I want to see how this game is doing in like other countries, because it may be that this is a game that's huge in China.
Yeah,
or
but
Japan
why?
Or
but why is it top grossing in the U.S.?
Right. I don't know. That's true. It would be someone else's chart if it were doing that well.
So far, nothing special.
So okay, it's a lot more popular in Singapore.
But we're still like you're still talking here, like hundreds of
yeah,
downloads
this,
a day.
These numbers are crazy. So it really means that that whoever's playing this game is there's just a small minority,
right, because they're always releasing cards. They're always releasing new cards. Like right. There literally could be, you know, 100 people spending hundreds of dollars on this game.
Right.
And 1,000 people spending a couple dollars in this game repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a mystery. Like I really, yeah. And it kind of brings, it really makes me question. It's like, like you said, we have a pretty good understanding of this industry but this is just, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I feel, yeah. I mean, so like Arash said, if you know anything about this, if there's a really great feedback cycle that we don't know about, even one that we might hate, but like at least one we could understand.
Mm-hmm. I would love
please,
to. Yeah, I'd just love to hear from.
Please
a
let us know, because we don't have the time to, like, you know, I mean, playing this game for an hour, 2 hours, that's not a problem, but mindlessly
maybe,
trying
maybe
to figure
like
out
after
what,
hour 10, like something suddenly happens,
right,
and it turns into an amazing game.
Right.
I don't know.
Like,
I mean, I'm so puzzled by this that I'm going to keep playing.
That's what kept me, but
I'm going to keep playing.
I literally couldn't find out what to do.
Next week, I'll quickly report whether or not I found this game to be fun. If something suddenly changed and I'm like, holy crap, like Rage of Bahamut is the best game
it's
ever.
It's not, but it'd still be
but
the ugliest game ever.
I am not holding my breath. And yes, considering how much money these guys are making, I would love for them to go hire, you know, someone cool and have them do some proper design for this, because this is embarrassing.
But it's all web. I mean,
you can make a beautiful web page. Like, web is no excuse. Like, if they want to use a web view and load it from a server, that's totally fine with me. But the fact that this thing is just...
It's true. I wonder if they figured out some crazy algorithm, or not algorithm, or like... what do I want to say? Equilibrium. That has nothing to do... That's like algorithm. I guess it kind of sounds similar. I don't know why I said algorithm. Anyway, where, you know, if you buy your own game,
mm-hmm.
okay, and you spend $10, you're going to get $7 back.
Okay, so this is something I was wondering, right? We talked about, like, maybe this is a bot-based success where they're...
Right, but they're, on grossing. I've never heard of that.
So here's the thing. I've heard of this too. Like, there was a... Okay, so let's take it, like, 2 years back. There used to be a deal where, how did this work? You could buy gift certificates and use them to, some people ran this thing. I think Apple got in the way of it, but there was a deal. I think actually Natalia from Emoji discovered this happening, but, people were basically going out and spending. I mean, let's say you want to go and do a huge, you know, ad campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You could go and spend $100,000 on iAds. And this is not unheard of. Like, I know some of the larger companies spent, like, back when there were millions of dollars spent on launching games like Zombie Jombie by Gree. So let's say you take that $3 million or whatever you're going to spend, $5 million on just promotion and buying banner ads across the web. And instead you use that to just buy your game. Mm-hmm. And you, like you said, you get 70% of it back. So really, you could spend all that money and it's whatever, 30% that's going to Apple mm-hmm. that you're really losing. So if you have a budget of $3 million, then you'd spend whatever, you know, 3 divided by 0.7. A lot more than that, actually. So anyway, you spend like a whole lot of money and you get it basically a huge, huge push because you're going to run up the grossing charts, like especially if you spent that money over the course of a week.
Yeah.
$3 million in sales.
I just don't see how you're going to make up that.
$10 million in sales, really, if you want 3% back.
I just don't know how you're gonna make 70%. How you're gonna make back the, like, and do that many people look at the grossing charts?
Right? So I don't know, and I've talked to Apple people about this too, and they're like, you know, we're really surprised that, like, sometimes when stuff goes up the grossing charts, we see that it actually goes up on the free and paid charts, because the grossing charts really, like, I think the intention is it's more for developers,
right? And interestingly, also, well, if they clicked it through like a link share link, they would get 25. They would only be they get 75% back.
Okay, there you go. So you
and, that, really... and that would make a big difference in this like scam world,
right?
But
in order to do this, I mean, you do need. Well, no, that's not true. Actually, you could all have it coming from one user, where one user just buys like a hojillion dollars worth of IAP.
You know, and they don't need to, and of course they don't need to buy all of it. Mm-hmm. But then I don't know.
So in any case, we're coming up with reasons for why this game is successful just, because we really just don't understand.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so we
but
should.
Yeah, that's this game. And the other thing we want to talk about this week, which ties in really well to this whole thing, is marketing. We've had emails from people. They're like, "What do you guys do to market your games?" And mm-hmm. I have a cool indie game, and should I go and spend, you know, $1,000 on iAds to promote it? Like, mm-hmm. what should I do to promote my game? So for the next, I don't know, half hour, we'd like to talk just real quickly about what our philosophies are on promotion and what do we recommend. I think it's different for different stages, right? So if you're two guys who have never made a game before and you're shipping your first title, it's a different thing than if you're two guys who've made games before and you're shipping your second mm-hmm. title and your first one was pretty successful. Because then you have users to move around. So let's tackle the first thing first, which is that you and your friend have made a cool game and he's an artist and you're a programmer. And your game is really good and it's great and you want the whole world to see it and you're hoping to do this full time, but maybe you have a job somewhere or you're doing consulting or you know, you're doing whatever else to pay the bills, but this game hopefully you want to be, you know, your next big success and you want to market this properly and you want to make sure that it can do whatever it's able to do. So there are a bunch of factors here, and Kevin, I want you to sort of jump in whenever. Mm-hmm. But the first is to really figure out who is your audience, like what kind of people are playing your game. There are types of games that are, you know, considered to be appealing to more core gamers, so it's going to be more, you know, sort of an action-oriented sort of thing. Like our game Zombie Gunship would fit perfectly well in that group. But then there's also, you know, more casual games, which are going to be very sort of broadly reaching, like a game like Cut the Rope or even Tower. Angry Birds, Tiny Tower, you know, stuff that we call casual games. And I think that influences really the most important part of marketing, which is sort of what kind of budget are you going to need, and is this something you can just promote kind of on a grassroots level? So the other thing that's important to mention before I get into this is that you should always start thinking about this really, really early. And I think even in part of the game design is thinking about how am I going to sell this game. So one of the things I'm always thinking about when we're building a game is what kind of screenshots are we going to take?
Hmm.
And does this game show well? Because if you have a game that's one screen and it's always that same screen, you're going to end up with five screenshots of one screen and the game's going to look boring. It may be the most exciting game in the world, but like imagine trying to sell Tetris right now on the App Store.
Yeah.
If no one knew what Tetris was and Tetris was a brand new creation, you're going to have five screenshots that are just like pictures of blocks falling. And that's not very exciting. And what some other developers will do is like they run into that situation, but then they take like a screenshot of their menu. Or they have, actually I'm looking at Rage of Bahamut still, and they have like some kind of just like completely unrelated painting that just says something. To try to sort of fill
the space. That's a screenshot. That's what a card
is. Oh yeah, that is.
Remember that their game is illustrations.
But anyway,
so random illustrations.
Yeah.
Anyway,
totally random.
That's kind of funny, actually.
So it's important to think about like how does this marketing come together? What is the message of this game? What is the key thing that people are going to want to download this game to try out? What's going to be cool about it? And you know, like with some games, it might be that you have like some kind of cool graphical style and they want to see more of that graphical style, or it's got some kind of cool physics-y thing. I mean, I think physics is played out now, but in the early days when you had physics, like people wanted to play with the physics because it was cool. So a lot of those things come into play. Like what are the aspects of, that are going to be core to your marketing and also core to your approach to the press? And so the other part of starting early is that let's say you're about, I don't know, about 3-4 weeks away from the release of your awesome new game. I think the key thing to start doing is to start thinking about what is your message going to be to the media. So there are a lot of sites. Of course, Touch Arcade is one of our favorites, but there are a whole lot of others. There's Pocket Gamer. There's 148 Apps.
Slide to Play.
And then
like 800 others.
Right. And then of course like App Advice and a whole bunch of others. And then you can go kind of further out on that circle and talk about some of the more Apple focused ones, depending on how broadly reaching your app may be. You might get covered
Infinite
by
Loop,
like, exactly, Tua, a whole bunch of
others. Engadget even maybe.
Yeah, Engadget, Wired, Kotaku, Joystick, a whole bunch of other kind of more general gaming press. They tend to cover more console PC stuff, but they cover iPhone now too. Also IGN is important to mention there as well. So what we usually do is, you know, we try to come up with kind of like a hit list of this is the press that's going to make sense for this game. And we try to craft a story. It's like, what is interesting about this game? What is different about this game that is something people haven't seen before? Is there some kind of cool mechanic? Is it dealing with some kind of social issue? Maybe even something is cool about the two of you. Like maybe you and your programmer friend or your artist friend are, there's something interesting about you. Maybe you're both
blind.
Maybe you're both blind or you're both like 12 years old or, maybe you're really, really old or maybe you have a cool job on the side. Like, maybe you're like a Air Force test pilot,
right,
you know, something
right.
like that. So
could you imagine if there was an Air Force test
could
pilot?
Could you imagine who is also not,
can you imagine that person?
Wouldn't
he be the coolest person
wouldn't
ever?
Wouldn't that be crazy? Yeah.
I wonder if you are an Air Force test pilot. And you're an iPhone. You should write us.
You should really write us.
We want you as a guest.
Should have you as a guest on our show. in any case, you know, there's a lot of this is about making the job of reporters easier. So you want to have something that's easy for them to say that, hey, this is cool. This is news. This is not, you know, the 357th downloadable card game.
Or maybe it is.
Maybe it is.
And that's what's cool about it. This is the 1,000th card game.
I think we're pretty cynical about card games at this point. So part of this whole goal is to be able to really narrow that message and make it into something that you can send to a reporter or writer as a very concise press release. And you're thinking about those screenshots, so those screenshots will be part of it. And all of these things go into what I like to call, or most people call, a press kit. And so it's got, you know, logo of your company, logo of your game. It's got everything that a writer needs to basically put together a good article about you. Also, you could also have a video. I think videos are really great, especially if your game is actually good. You're going to want to showcase the fact that, like, hey, the gameplay of this game is cool. And it should be very, very short.
You want to make it easy for them.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. And everything you're talking about is about making it easy for both. The press are your users.
Right.
Right. And you're just making it easy for them to understand why.
The press are professional users. I mean,
right.
When you send something out to Eli Hodapp and you say, hey, you know, review my game, he's a professional game player. Like, he's been playing games for a really long time. He knows the whole space of games. He knows every single game that, you know, influenced the creation of your game. And you want to make his job easy. So you want to give him a video that, you know, people like Eli can look at and be like, okay, I understand what this game is
about.
Now I can write about it. And then you give him some good content in your press release. That's like, hey, you know, you can kind of, you know, take all that and digest it and put it out like, hey, this is a little story about the developers and they're a cool team from Siberia. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So there's that whole part to it. And I think this is important for being able to get press, because at the end of the day, you are among hundreds of other people that are emailing sites like Touch Arcade every day. And if they're looking at two games and they're trying to decide which one to cover, and one of them has a video and has a great press release and has all the screenshots they need and just looks really great, versus another one where they have to go online and try to like dig up all the info, you know, it's easy to imagine that they're going to use the former over the latter. So you've done all these things right. You've sent out your press release to people. Oh, by the way, the other thing that I should mention is when you're contacting the press, like, keep your emails short. You don't need to give them like an 8-page thing with like 70 megabytes of videos attached to it. It's really, again, keep your mind like you are this reporter and you're receiving stuff from people. You know, put yourself in their shoes. Make things easy for them. Put a link to the video instead of attaching it to the email. Oh, the other thing I should mention is that if you are thinking about going with like a PR agency to do your media stuff,
don't.
Well, it depends. So if you have a lot of money and you just hate this kind of thing, we're cracking open another beer. If you have a lot of money and you have like VCs and you're just tons of cash and you just don't know how to spend it and you're terrible at this media stuff and you have no desire to learn, well, you're first of all a very bad entrepreneur. But second, you could go and get a PR firm. And PR firms have done this. They have connections to all the people in the press. But the problem with this is that it costs a lot of money. I mean, it can be thousands of dollars a month to do a promotion for your game. And it's stuff that you can really, as an indie developer, is really not that hard to do. So crafting those messages and things like that, it just takes some common sense and a little bit of creativity. What I wanted to mention, though, is that we've had a growing number of PR firms and I guess developers who think that's cool to send stuff that's embargoed to sites. So an embargo, for those of you that don't know, is you can send a story to a news organization and say, you know, this stuff is, here's all the info, but you guys are not allowed to release a story by until like the 10th of September or whatever. And this is something that was, I guess it was common practice a while ago, but people are still doing it.
It's just the way, you know, the motivation, if people have a brain when they're doing it, is to try and, you know, resonate all of your press together.
Right. The idea is to have everyone talk about it on the same day so you can focus it all. But the problem with this is that when you send an embargoed press release to someone like Touch Arcade, these guys get tons and tons and tons of press releases. So if you are inventing reasons for them not to write about your game,
not going to work.
Like, that's terrible. Like, not only now are you in the sea of possible games to write about, but you're also this game that they have to remember, like, oh, okay, we should remember that the embargo lifts on Blow and Joe's random the 10th.
Yeah, I think most people do it just to feel big.
Right.
Like, it's just like, oh, you know, like, if we Microsoft was releasing a game, they would embargo this.
Right. And I think it's important to remember, like, it's tempting as an indie developer to be like, yeah, I'm going to model myself against Apple. Like, we're going to be secret about everything. Right, we're Apple. We're going to embargo this.
I'm going to make it's crazy decisions secret. And, like
yeah.
stick to them.
And you know, like, that stuff can be a real disservice to you when you're small. If you pretend you're this giant mega corporation, it really can be. So don't embargo stuff. Just send it out at a reasonable time. If it has to be 3 days before your launch, just because you want to try to focus your press, that's good.
Also, like, if you send it out, I mean, keep in mind that, like, if you send, if you ask Touch Arcade or, you know, Slide to Play to review your game, if they do it multiple weeks before your game,
right,
they're going to release it as a preview.
Yep.
If your game is good, they'll probably also release a full review.
Right.
So you don't need to worry. Like, the worst case, you know, you just don't, because that's exactly what happened to Zombie Highway. I got some previews, I got some reviews, and, you know, that's just how it worked. I mean, it turns out that most of them released the review on the day that the game came out, because that's when people want to hear about it.
They've already done a preview. There is something to be said, though. So, I mean, the App Store itself, I feel like it's an impulse buy market, right? You usually don't plan on waking up at 7 in the morning to go and download, you know, some game, unless it's something really special. But for the bulk of apps, like, you just see it there and you go download it, or you read about it and you go download it. So it's actually not that great to have, you know, a whole campaign of, like, teaser trailers and little things that lead up to your release, because ultimately, like, somebody's going to read about your game and they're like, oh, this is exciting. They're going to want to go download it, but they can't. And that, you know, as opposed to having an article that comes out about your game or a press release or announcement or something you put on your Facebook page where it's like, it's here, check it out, how cool it is, go download it now. So better to have press that I think comes out after the release than really before.
Right, previews are not
They're good. They're good to like build up the hype and build up that drama. But the problem is just that the space of people, like compared to your total user base, that's going to make you successful. The percentage of players that are like really hanging on to Touch Arcade's every word, and they're on the Touch Arcade forums every day, and they're like keeping track of like, okay, what comes out in 2 weeks, and they're like, they have like their release dates in mind. You know, that's not the bulk of users. Most of them are just going to see like somebody tweet about something, see it on someone's Facebook page, go download it, and that's that. It's not a big hype driven
system. It's not like a movie.
Yeah, it really isn't. Unless you're a huge company, like you're Gree, and you're going to spend millions and millions of dollars promoting a game. Right. There isn't really that sense of this like huge press thing that leads up and builds hype, and then suddenly the day of it coming out. Unless you're some kind of like, you know, someone. I mean, there's always an exception to the rule. I think someone like Sword and Sorcery did this really well, where they had a huge like lead up, and there's a lot of hype, and they built all this like art and like their music samples, and like everybody was really excited when it came out, like because they had been frothing for weeks. But but you know, it's hard to match that.
You can't do that. I mean,
I don't think our audience is not.
I mean, the interesting thing for everyone to be, you know, Arash is giving some really good sort of. This is all like pre. You know, this is from like almost concept. You know, conceiving the idea to releasing it, the sort of a kind of a how-to. And you don't, I don't think you need to, oh, I'm kind of far from the mic here. Anyway, you don't need to freak out if like, you're like, oh, I didn't think about marketing. But, you know, it should be in the back of your mind. But one key thing, other than the PR agency thing, which is, you know, really, unless you really hate, find a friend. Some, you got to have a friend that you know has a like a PR...
Yeah, if you can find a friend like that you can pay like $1,000 a month to,
or nothing,
versus like $8,000 a month that you'd pay to a PR agency, it's a totally different thing.
The key theme, I think, though, if you hear what the things that Arash is saying, is they're all free.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and if a website asks you to pay them money to review your game, do not pay them money.
Right.
Because
no one reads those sites anyway. Like the sites that are, I don't know of any like very successful websites that are demanding.
No,
money
certainly not long term. Certainly not. I mean. And it's also, you're probably better off like buying clicks. So it is, I think it's really important. And this is probably, as now we'll probably start getting into, well, okay, now my game's out. What do I do? I think we can, you know, Arash is giving very generic advice, not too generic. I mean, but like advice for everybody, is, I think if we talked about our experiences, I bet we would kind of find that spending money is almost always ineffective.
Yeah.
You know, if your game was $100 or $50 or $30, you know, maybe you could spend some money, more money on ads. But you do it and you think there's a difference. You like try and see it in your data and you can't in the end.
I think it's not an effective way unless you're spending a lot of money.
And but certainly, I mean, long term.
It's not necessary, right? So Kevin, how much money have you spent on ads on Zombie Highway?
I mean, I have spent less than $20,000. However, that's not because I should have, but because most of that was experimentation and, just like, well, I should at least try to do this. And you know, I was featured and I was like, well, it would make sense for me to run an ad now while I'm featured just to give myself that extra lift. And I was in the top 10 but I have no proof that it made any difference or that I made any of my money back. I mean, I have some data that shows that, you know, the best ad I've ever run that had data tracking on it said that I paid $5 per, paid user. Yeah. And, you know, you can kind of like, oh, well, each user will tell their friends. But in the end, it's like you just can't, even at $5.
$5 per user seems really high to me.
You just can't. I mean, I think that the big guys pay like $3.
Okay.
And that's for a free game, though.
Yeah.
You got to remember that. You know, I'm paying $5 for, and I'm getting a paid user.
This was for a 99-cent user.
Running ads for, you know, an ad agency will tell you that running ads for a paid game is much less effective.
It is. Any promo really is
and less not just effective. Per downloads, but in terms of like if you have IAP or something, like the sort of viral effects that are initiated by getting one person to download your game.
That's correct.
Are multiplied obviously with a free game. I think a lot of people always are asking me like,
well, people are also like, I get questions from people like, I just don't have a budget for ads. Like, is my game ever going to be successful?
Right.
And to those people, I can honestly say like, Zombie Gunship, number one grossing. We didn't spend a single cent on ads until much later, until after the game, you know, had its peak. And later on, we bought some Touch Arcade banner ads. But it's not, it is by no means a prerequisite for success.
Right. And likewise, you know, I spent that money on Zombie Highways advertising before it was really successful. And I guess I technically spent more money than that when you include Free App a Day, which is another thing I get a lot of questions about.
So this is let's take a break and let's just set the topic to Free App a Day, because I think a lot of people are wondering, is it worth it for me to give Free App a Day
a complicated question,
large amount of money, a percentage of my money. What I can say about Free App a Day is that they make different deals with different people.
Right.
So depending on if you have a you know, portfolio of successful games, you'll have a different deal with Free App a Day than
if you've never had a successful campaign with Free App a Day before.
So you know, the terms of that equation are going to be really different for everyone.
Right.
But in terms of is Free App a Day just itself, the cost aside, is it a successful way to promote a game?
Well, it's just clicks.
It is clicks.
And it's clicks in the way that you want them, which is all at once.
Right.
And it's people who are gamers.
Right.
I think that there's a good quality in those clicks. But once again, you know, Free App a Day will not give you, I never really pounded them for it, but you're not going to get all the demographic data or anything like that. You're just going to, now they don't even, I don't even think you can see the number of clicks that you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, but what Arash is saying is right. If your game is not, when I went there with Zombie, I knew, you know, Arash and Free App a Day have a certain arrangement, because even with Free App a Day before Free App a Day was Free App a Day.
Right, our arrangement is different from everyone else's. So,
right, I was sort of a nobody, and I had a really high quality game, and I had no idea what was about to happen, and neither did they. So there's, you know, just it's just business. It's risk. They're like, we could be making this much money,
right?
Or, you know, building our image this much,
right?
And also,
it's really no different than approaching an investor,
right? And that was a year ago,
right?
And things were a little bit different. And you know, you work with them now. The game has changed, and you know, I don't know. I haven't run a Free App a Day campaign in 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
And the download numbers have gotten. I know on the last one that, you know, first of all, it's another thing is I never did only Free App a Day.
Yeah,
and I don't think any of us have.
No. So this is an interesting thing. Let's acknowledge that this is. A lot of the stuff we've said up to this point before Free App a Day was about launch marketing.
Right.
So there's
pre-launch marketing.
And pre-launch marketing.
Thinking about marketing.
Do you do previews? How do you prepare for marketing? How do you prepare for launch? So let's finish that, and then we'll talk about this other stuff, which is a bit more like sustaining a successful app. So you've gotten ready to launch your game. You've put it on the store. You've sent out all the press releases. Do you just cross your fingers and say, you know, I hope all the news is going to really make everyone come and download my game, and
I mean,
sometimes that works. I mean, if your game is really good or if it has that special something, it's going to be successful. But I think at the end of the day, a lot of games don't hit the top right from day one.
No.
Sometimes it can be a long time before they really get sort of discovered. And even you get a lot of coverage and still not quite hit that. One of the things I have to recommend to people really that helped us a lot is just try to come to some of the conferences.
Hmm.
Come to GDC, come to WWDC is expensive, but you can actually come to San Francisco, not pay for the conference, but hang out at all the parties. Get to know people that are in the industry. You know, get to meet people that are making games, people that are running small companies, people that are larger companies. I think all in all, the whole kind of mobile games community is a very friendly and welcoming
one. Mm-hmm. They'll play your game. I'll play your game.
People will play your game. They'll tell you if they like your game.
I will download it.
Do this, if you can prepare a build of your game, I don't know, 4 weeks before you're about to release it, and you time it so that it comes up on GDC or WWDC or one of these conferences. Casual Connect was the one that we went to recently. And you can show it to people. One, you get feedback, but two, I think the most important thing is building allies. So if you can find someone who's a game developer who maybe launched their game 6 months ago and has 1 million users, 5 million users, whatever, and they think your game is really great and they think it's going to be really successful, they're going to give you promotion. They're going to send their users to you. You can set up a thing, and I really recommend for every game developer, put a news feed in your app where you can just have a message of the day type of thing. And a lot of people will also have that. So if you can find someone who's got that and does a lot of cross promotion, they can set, hey, go download, you know, Adventure Ball, which is your new game, from their game, and they'll send you a lot of clicks. And then later on, it's kind of that's sort of an investment they're making in you because they believe your game will be successful. Later on, when you're, you know, number one grossing, you can send some links back to them, and they'll be successful in the same way.
And I think that that's, I mean, what you're basically talking about is cross promo.
Yeah, I mean, exactly, and, talking about cross promo.
And I mean, this is sort of, I feel like we were all waiting. We were both waiting. Like, this is the, I think we both agree, is the holy grail of marketing.
Of indie marketing.
I mean, Free App A Day is, in a way, is kind of like, it's like a one-sided cross promo, but it, to me, it feels like cross promo.
It is like an app that'll promote you, but you have to pay for it.
And you have to say, this is Free App A Day. Who's like, you should download the Free App A Day app.
In their description.
In the description.
Yeah.
And so it's not like pure cross promo, but in many ways, a lot of the value that Free App A Day receives from their partners is the fact that your sweet app, which is number one, not because Free App A Day put you there, they helped you get there, but they're betting on you. They're like, I bet if we give you the push, if we push you onto the top 100, top 200, which is what they can do, that you'll go all the way to the top, that you'll ride that wave. And now everyone's going to see that Free App A Day put you there, and they're like, wow, Free App A Day can help me not miss these deals.
Right.
So that's kind of like cross promo. But then the pure cross promo is where, you know, in January, Limbic runs and sends people to Zombie Highway, and then later when they release an update, Zombie Highway sends a bunch of people to Zombie Gunship.
Right. And this is exactly what we did. When you launched Zombie Highway, we sent you users. Later on, you sent some people to Zombie Gunship. We sent some people to Zombie Highway. I mean, it's just a back and forth, right, seesaw kind of thing.
And we don't use any sophisticated tracking.
No. Nope.
I mean, you are probably a little bit more sophisticated than I am. But we use like Bitly.
I mean, largely a lot of it just is on Bitly links.
And it's just like just account clicks.
We've done some back end stuff to give us like a more robust serving system for the clicks and the news, rather. But you don't need that. I mean, you can really just like have your game just pull an HTML page or a text file that's somewhere on some web server somewhere. It doesn't have to be a sophisticated thing at all.
And we just count clicks, not even conversions.
Right.
And, you know, obviously some games have better conversion rates than others. And
sure.
But you kind of like figure it out because it's usually not based on number of clicks. It's based on, you know, time run and like ballpark clicks, and
it's all pretty fudgy. I mean, nobody gets too strict.
And
about
no money's changing hands. So like,
right, that's the important thing. You can get this for free from day one from people that are indies that believe in you and want to help you.
Right.
So
I'm amazed because I get so many emails from people.
Right.
About crap that we could probably talk about, but I so rarely get an email from someone who's like, hey, I made a game that's kind of like semi-hardcore, like,
right,
it targets,
I think,
boys
this would totally
to
fit your Zombie Highway demographic,
like,
I
should play it.
I would welcome that type of thing. So if there are people out there, you know, feel free, email us, contact at Walled Garden Weekly. We both have a zombie game, so if you've got a zombie game coming,
right, you know, and that's good,
it has to be good. Like, please don't send me a collectible card game, don't send me this awful horrible thing you threw together in two weekends. Like, it needs to be great. Definitely. This is something that we all really believe in. And I think that's kind of one of the strengths of this indie community is that we're not really competitive, right? We don't have like stocks that we need to...
Unless you clone our game.
If you clone our game, we'll be very sad and mad at you. But other than that, it's like, if you have a good game idea, I want to make you successful because it's just all based on
love. And this culture permeates.
It does.
I mean...
You just push
like
the...
Like even the guys that charge like serious coin for clicks. Yeah. I mean, the, you know... I don't know any numbers, but I know Nimblebit and Emoji both have charged for clicks from like big players. Sure. They're not hiding it.
They link to a lot of these social game companies. You know, I mean, that's the source of revenue. When you get big enough, you can do that.
Right, when you get big enough. But they have not become greedy about their inventory. Right. They're happy to share it.
Absolutely.
And just because it kind of comes down to what, whenever I hear marketing conversations, always is in the back of my mind, which is you have to have a good game.
You do.
And it's something that's really hard for people to accept and to understand that,
right,
like, well, you although know, maybe your game wasn't successful because, not because it's so hard to break into this, but because your game just wasn't that good.
It's true. I mean, if a game is really great, like truly a wonderful game, it will find its way up, like 10 million from a few weeks ago. Like, that was the game that...
It's hard when it's niche, you know? It makes it harder. Like, you could have a great game,
yep,
you know, and
It could be the best helicopter flight simulator, but
right. But it's just like, well, it, and this is sort of, you know, wraps right back around to what Arash was talking about, which is thinking about how are you selling this game. And if you, you know, I was talking to my friend a couple months ago about how he wanted to build, make a tower defense game. And I was like, well, you know, the only problem is it's a really well-defined genre and your game's going to need to be amazing.
Yep.
In order for you to do well. And he was sort of like, well, no, this is just sort of like, I want to try some things and I want to have some fun. And I really don't care about being successful. And I was like, good. in that he understood what he was up against is that this was not like, if my game is good and I release it, I'm going to make like $250,000. No, like you know, when I was making Zombie Highway, one of the things I was excited about was I was like, no one has made a game like this before. But it also has that sort of generic appeal, cars, guns, and zombies. In fact, that's how I lead my marketing is I say cars, guns, and zombies. Like, what more could you want? And obviously that appeals to a very specific demographic, but that was always like kind of in my head. And I wasn't as scientific as Arash is about it, but you know, it was just always there. And I can say like, I didn't care about marketing. I didn't even think about it. I just made amazing games and they were successful, but I always did. I always cared. I just never articulated it. I never, like, the game ideas I vetted, I rejected because I thought that people wouldn't understand them.
Right.
And that's part of marketing. Marketing happens before you write your first line of code.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how are you going to tell people about this?
Right. I think ultimately, like, this, when you look at people that have been successful marketers and people that have been unsuccessful marketers, it all comes down to how well can you put yourself in the shoes of someone who's browsing the App Store and has never heard of your game.
Right.
Because if you're one of those people who can build this super complicated game and then, you know, delude yourself into thinking that the person who sees it is going to get it right away, like, this is not your strong suit. Go find someone to help you with this. But if you have, like, if you're constantly thinking, like, yeah, okay, so if I make this game, like, this way, like, are people going to like it? Is this going to be too complicated? Like, oh, no, this is too hard for people to understand. Let's make it simpler.
Right.
Pull it
back. To be able to sacrifice your own,
right,
you know,
and that has to be, like, I think even as a game designer, you have mm-hmm. to be having that kind of that loop going on in your mind is, like, you're always seeing it from the eyes of a player who's never played it before. Right.
And you don't have to be perfect. You know, you can make some mistakes, but it is important to understand that not everyone cares about, you know, cares about the depth that you might care about. Right. It's tough. I mean, and, you know, to people who would say, oh, you guys are just, you know, you're just pandering to whatever, and, you know, that's not what game design is all about, is it's like, well, sometimes it's not, I first say, like, that's baloney, like, you know, you can make a really, it's just another challenge, it's just, okay, this is the market, I want to keep making games, so I'm gonna make a game that sells, and that's not, you know, that's actually more pure in some ways, because you're like, instead of going to work at Google doing like nothing, I'm gonna like keep doing what I'm doing and find a way to be creative inside of the wiggle room that you have. Anyway, but that's besides the point. If you have a game that is simple and it's not constrained by its sheer complexity in terms of its marketability, but it's like wrapped in this really dark skin,
mm-hmm.
you might be able to just reskin it. And, you know, like, oh, it's not zombies, cars, and guns. It's like
squirrels, trees, and nuts.
Right. I mean, right. Yes. If only nuts jumped on your squirrel, or maybe a squirrel jumped on a running nut, like a nut falling through it.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, where you are changing the, you know, the, what I would say, like the sort of the palette that is required. Right. To enjoy your game, and to understand your game, it's important. Now, it's not always easy, but it might require you to, you know, sacrifice some elements. But in the end, like, just the unfortunate truth is, people just don't care as much as you, yeah. And you need to find out what they care about,
right.
And take that part of your game and make it easy to understand and make it great. And hide, I always say, hide the depth. Right. The good players will find the depth.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, part of my advice of go to conferences and show your game to people is also that for the cost of, you know,
right,
it's a few nights of hotel or, you know, schlepping with your friend who lives in San Francisco and the plane flight over or the drive over.
No, yeah, absolutely.
You get an enormous amount of value because by hanging out with other game developers and showing them your game, you're going to get feedback that you just, like, if you're working in your basement and maybe showing a couple of your sycophantic friends that are going to be like, oh yeah, man, that's totally great, your game is amazing. You really need to show it to some people that do this for a living.
I mean, the advice is, for a lot of people, is probably pretty good. Also, but more what you're saying is like the opportunity for cross promotion.
Yeah, it's twofold. Like a retweet. I mean, you're gonna get response from people like, hey, this game is good, like, this is awesome, I want to be a part of this game's success. Yeah. And then the other one is that, you know,
legitimate feedback. You might forego a misstep.
Absolutely. And it could be a really simple thing, like your menu sucks.
Right.
Like, fix the menu and this game would be great. Or maybe it's just really hard to figure out how to, you know, do
and
this one
is,
thing.
This is advice that I did not heed at all. I mean, I went to 360 iDev in 2010. I sort of went to GDC, but like not actually in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to WWDC like a couple months ago. I mean, no one knew me.
Yeah, you've
that's
been
why
pretty
I was
hidden.
Like, I need to go.
You've
I was
done,
like, no one
you've
knows
done kind of a poor job of getting to know the indie.
You know, and I and this WWDC, I was like, I didn't even get a pass, and I was like, no, I'm going. And I did a good job this year, I think. Like, I was sort of like, hey, like, oh, who are you? Blah blah blah. Like, I'm, you know, here I am. Blah blah. I know this guy. I know Arash. And my game has 15 million downloads.
So you basically just name dropped me in order to get into the
Well, that was
circles.
That
Is
used
that
to be
you
now
did?
You name drop me.
No, oh, I do I?
To somebody, I don't know, about something.
About something.
I know maybe Kevin. for a Persian cred. Kevin, I know this other Persian guy.
You're only half Persian though. You're half as Persian as I am.
You need that in this area though. I guess
I could teach you things about being Persian, man.
That's true. I would have to unlearn things
I don't
about
know.
Being
I don't
white.
Know what I'm going to teach you, but certainly.
What I'm saying is that, like, it was not a matter, like, here I am, like, a lot of these people that I want to meet are, in by some measures, not as successful, don't have apps that are successful as mine by some measures, or all measures or no measures. But I'm not part of this club, but I'm like, I'm just like all of you. But because I didn't go to these conferences, at the beginning, I didn't have this relationship. And really, if it was not for Arash, like, I really would have had a much harder time sort of gaining sort of social weight in these groups. But if I had been going from the beginning, I don't think I would have. And it can be worth, I mean,
well,
really,
it isn't
a friendship.
To say that there's a big click that you have to feel like if you're this developer from, you know, Nebraska and
you want to
come into this group. Like, there's, it, I think everybody's still very welcoming, even if you're some small dev who's
absolutely,
never done anything
absolutely.
Before.
But like, you can't just come in and like and yell and buy everybody drinks and then expect to be
cross promoted by
retweeted
everyone.
By all right you
right.
you need it's like
certainly
you know it's to show that you're actually because I'm that way like I want these people like I like these people
mm-hmm.
like I was like I want to be your friends
that's
anyway.
I think that's a good topic for another show is how do you get into the I mean there's like a bit of a social circle around iPhone developers. And how do you, as a new coming developer, how do you get to know other developers? Especially if you're somewhere like, you know, maybe you're not even in the United States. You're listening in from like Brazil.
Mm.
Like, how do you find other developers? How do you get in touch with people on Twitter? How do you get into the conversation? How do you become
it's
a
hard.
Somebody?
You have to, yeah. I mean, that's definitely a whole other conversation.
And that is a different conversation,
but
a good one. And I think that's valuable as a big part of marketing. Because again, like our marketing, a lot of it is based on promotion, cross promotion.
I would just say don't spend money. I mean, obviously you might need to spend money.
Sure.
But just like, it's just pulling teeth. It should be pulling teeth.
It should really not be necessary. Right. You shouldn't feel like you have to spend money to be successful.
Oh.
And I think
also,
anybody
well,
who wants you to spend money is gonna take great pains to convince you that if you don't spend money, like you're gonna like sacrifice your opportunity to be successful. And
right.
I really think that I can really stress that that's not true.
Right. I was also gonna, we didn't talk about Facebook.
Though
I'm not even sure that it, I mean, I have like 180,000 fans. I'm not even sure it matters.
I don't know. I think
and
Facebook,
that's amazing.
Facebook
that's amazing.
Comes later. And I think we should totally do a part two on marketing, which is just like, you launched your app, you're doing pretty good.
Okay.
Or you did okay. What do you do to keep it going? And we'll talk about Facebook. We'll talk about Twitter. We'll talk about all of the other, you know, about updates and how do you do launch promotion run updates. Those things. So.
But yeah, it is important to know that like everything we've said is so DIY. Like it was DIY.
Do it yourself, yeah.
DIY. I was like DIY.
Well, you're going to do some DUI pretty soon.
Yeah.
Lol.
No. Yeah, I'll just make the wife drive us to get wings or something.
Excellent.
Man, I'm so hungry. Anyway, all right. So that was interesting. That was a very, I mean, there's just, you realize, sometimes you just, you start digging and you're like, oh shit. Like we need to go
there's
deep.
A lot. This definitely needs a part two. We're running on 55 minutes. So
oh my God.
For those of you that have been listening this long, I hope you've learned some bits.
I have no idea. Anyway, yeah.
Definitely write in, contact at Walled Garden Weekly. We've been getting great emails from people. Please send me your thoughts. Kevin and I will read them diligently.
Yeah. Send us your games. We haven't even gotten one person say, like, you need to review this game.
I would love to see a really good game by you, by someone else, games that people are playing out there that have
no card collecting games, please.
Jesus, yeah. But again, my offer stands. If you can explain Rage of Bahamut to me, I would love to hear that. I may even put you on air. We'll see. Anyway, I hope you have a great week. This has been Walled Garden Weekly number 6. Thank you for joining us.
Adios.
Arash and Kevin signing out. Thank you. Bye-bye.